Welcome everybody to this evening's teleseminar called Discover the Path to Inner Happiness. My name is Damien Sen and it is a great pleasure to have each and every single one of you on the call this evening. Now I'll be joined in a few moments from now with my very good friend Alexis Garnett-Miller, and we'll be talking and exploring the concept of happiness, and it's a topic that I have an incredible amount of interest in, and I'm really excited about finding more out about the topic through Alexis. Now before we actually jump into the questions, I just wanted to give everyone a quick introduction on how this call works. Now for those of you who haven't tuned in before, I run a series of calls, teleseminars each week at Thursday 8 o'clock p.m. London time. And each week I interview someone who I believe is doing incredible things in the world. So if this is your first time on the call, certainly take the opportunity to check out peopleyoushouldmeet.com. There's some great recordings of the previous interviews that I've done, and this one will also be available on the site tomorrow. Now the call this evening is actually going to run for around an hour. Over the course of the hour I will be asking Alexis a series of my own questions, but I will also be asking some questions that came through the site from various people on happiness as I go along as well. So if you have asked a question when you sign up for the call, certainly be on the look at the listen out. Also, hopefully if we do have some time at the end, I will open the call to any other questions that people may have on the topic of happiness. So if something does pop up into your mind as we move along, you can just jot it down, and hopefully we'll have some time at the end to ask some questions as well. Excellent. So Alexis, I met Alexis probably must have been around 2.5 years ago through a networking organisation that I run called Web Wednesdays, and the thing that struck me when I met Alexis for the first time was just how happy and chirpy a personality she was. And the thing that I found particularly refreshing was the fact she came from my home of Australia. So she was very upbeat, very vibrant, and we just made an instant connection and have been friends ever since. And Alexis has been on an incredible journey herself and really has explored the concepts of happiness. This exploration has led her to set up a centre called the Happiness Centre, which we'll find out more about on the call, and has also inspired her to design the Happiness Coaching Program. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call Alexis. How are you doing, Alexis?
I am well. Thank you very much for the invitation to join. And I heard somebody before was on the call from Finland. What amazes me about these teleconferences is that they do attract people from all around the world, and it's an amazing topic, isn't it, happiness, because it's so universal. It doesn't matter what country people are in or where their backgrounds might be from, everybody is seeking to have a sense of happiness in their lives. So
yeah. I think it's happiness as a concept, if you ask people what they want, is probably the most widely expressed desire for life, and that is universal as well. And just give people an idea, we've had people sign on for the call from 13 different countries around the world. So I'll just give you a very quick hello, whether you're in Australia, Belgium, Bulgaria, Canada, Finland, France, Ireland, Japan, Norway, South Africa, Sweden, UK or US. Yeah, just wanted to welcome you to the call. Okay, Alexis. Inner happiness, lots of people have definitions for happiness, but I guess the place I wanted to actually start the call off this evening was by asking you, what exactly is inner happiness?
Well, the reason why I chose inner happiness instead of just the word happiness, and it's mainly that generally in the Western world, people are very much looking beyond themselves or outside of themselves for something else to make them happy. Whether that be somebody else or something else, so material possessions or not having a relationship and desiring to have a relationship in their lives. So instead of just calling it happiness, I really prefer to talk about inner happiness, because it brings that focal point back within ourselves. And over the years, as I've talked to people about the concepts of happiness and inner happiness, what consistently comes up is that it's a feeling and it's also a state. And that feeling of inner happiness is something that's much more calm and much more centered, as opposed to associations with happiness can be something kind of upbeat and really lively and kind of a level of energy that isn't really sustainable realistically for most people. So I very much prefer the concept of inner happiness because it speaks to that that sense of satisfaction and peace that we have when we're getting our needs met and we're being true to ourselves. And over the conversations that I've spoken with hundreds of clients over the years, they generally define inner happiness as a state where they're doing what is true for them and they're honouring their needs on a daily basis and they're living honestly within themselves and also in their relationships with their work and with the people around them.
Brilliant.
That's not a very simple explanation, though, is it?
No, you covered some really... I'm going to actually ask a few more questions around that because you did bring some excellent points up there. You touched on the concept of needs. Now, some people may not have a real connection with what it is that they truly need. I was just wondering if you could give some guidance on how people could start uncovering what it is their personal needs are. And this may particularly be relevant for people who spend a lot of their time looking after the needs of others. Often they may actually neglect their own needs, I guess, through paying attention to other people. And, yeah, I was just wondering if you could...
I can probably answer that question by, you'll know when your needs aren't being met, when you're feeling agitated, frustrated, dissatisfied, moody. People can most readily identify with feelings, and we'll label them negative feelings, even though intrinsically nothing is actually positive or negative. Okay. But if we're having feelings that we'd rather not have, that's the signal that we've got a need that's not being met.
Okay.
So even for the callers right now, you might even want to pause and notice, well, you know, at some point today, have you felt the way that you'd rather not feel? And if you felt that way, what need of yours was not being met? And then perhaps noticing, well, how would you like to have met that need? What more specific thing could you have done to meet that need?
Okay.
Because it's very easy for us to get contained and distracted by the emotions and staying in a place that we don't want to be, feeling a way that we don't want to feel. But actually, I think unhappiness is a really great thing. When we're feeling a sense of unhappiness, it's a wonderful flag for us to pause and say, oh, okay, hold on, something's not in balance here. So let's listen to that signal and what is that telling me about where I'm not being honest with myself or where I'm not connecting to a need. And sometimes those needs can be, well, often they're really simple. It's a need for connection, so to pick up the phone and have a conversation with someone. It's a need to resolve something that's been misunderstood or a need to be understood, a need to express or say something that we have left unsaid during that day. Sometimes it's as simple as drink a beer, glass of water, pause, take a deep breath, everything will feel just fine. So learning to tune in again to what those needs are within ourselves. Because we are taught to tune out from them in many ways. We you know, there are so many people that I meet through the work that I do who they're a bit numb to life.
Yeah.
And it takes them sometimes weeks, pretty rarely months, but often weeks to tune back in again to feeling more alive, because they're so used to ignoring their needs. And of course, if we ignore our unmet needs for long periods of time, then that does accumulate into all sorts of psychological and physiological experiences, like, I don't like to give it labels, but for the sake of the call, things like experiencing periods of unease, depression, anxiety, feeling in a state of fear or sadness for long periods of time, or even if we have physical ailments, most of the time it is a signal that we haven't been listening to our needs for long periods of time.
Mm. there's again some great points in there. And one of the core challenges I see people experience, and it's particularly relevant as the world becomes more and more complex, more and more driven by, I guess, external factors like media and newspapers and internet and TV. There are so many things that are in our environment these days that can potentially distract us away from who we are. And I think the concept of actually tuning in is a really important one. And I guess, look, with all these different influences, quite often they're there in our environments to help us tune out. So whether people might sit in front of the TV and literally tune out from their life or distract themselves through any other many forms of distractions that are available in this modern day society. And I was just wondering, Alexis, how do you personally tune in, and how might you guide someone to actually tune in more in their life?
The first thing I encourage people to do is to have some silence each day.
Okay.
And for many people, that's a real challenge. I hear all of the excuses why that's not possible. And yet, the moment that they do start, even for 10 minutes a day, sitting somewhere really quietly, it could be at the start of the day, just as you're getting up, or at the end of the day, and just pausing, closing your eyes, and noticing what's alive in me now.
Mm.
And creating some space to simply allow those signals to come more alive to our senses. Mm. So we tune out from those signals from the body. But the moment that we pause and we sit somewhere comfortable, close our eyes and just take our awareness down to, you know, into our body. And our body is an amazing receptor for telling us what we ought to do or what we ought not to do.
Yeah.
If something feels comfortable, it's the signal to do it.
Yeah.
And if something feels uncomfortable, it's a simple signal that it's not the right thing for us. It's not going to honour our needs. It's not the best thing for us to do right now.
Yeah.
And I find too often that we teach ourselves for whatever reason, but we teach ourselves to ignore those signals. So most people I meet are a little bit addicted to pain. They're so used to being in a state of being uncomfortable, feeling numb, feeling frustrated within themselves, feeling tension, feeling stressed, that they don't actually know how to pause and get connected back to themselves.
Yeah.
So I think we have to take a bit of time to kind of tune in again and just notice it. And you can practice this in a really easy way to do it, is just noticing with food, actually, because it's something that we all do many times a day, we just eat. And say, I don't know if you've had dinner this evening, or if you try it when you have breakfast in the morning, just check in with yourself before you choose to eat something. Are you doing it because you automatically do it, or are you doing it because your body really wants it? Mm. And when you're choosing lunch tomorrow, instead of just choosing something you think you should have, simply notice those signals from your body. Well, what would I really, what do I need? Mm. What would I like?
Well, I like what you said about conditioned discomfort. And I was running a workshop with a friend of mine, and there's probably 20 of us in the seminar room, and we were sitting in a horseshoe-like formation, and everyone was sitting down in their chairs. And before kicking off the workshop, he just invited everyone to just take a moment to get comfortable in their chairs before we kicked off the workshop. And then everyone just sitting in their seats were just adjusting and making themselves comfortable. And then after a couple of moments, everyone became still again. And then he asked the question, you know, how come you were all sitting uncomfortably before this? And I just think it's a really interesting thing to bring up, just in our natural lives. Often we do live in unnecessary states of discomfort. And just really coming back to the body and tuning in can be really, really powerful. And another thing you sort of touched on there, Alexis, as well, was just these feeling states. So happiness is a feeling, and also unhappiness is a feeling. And I guess often prolonged periods of unhappiness will manifest in the body in some way, shape or form through illness or otherwise. I was just wondering if you could jump in a little bit more and explain how to really, like you mentioned drinking water, breathing, what are some other simple techniques that people can use to really connect fully with their bodies and really be completely in tune with these feedback mechanisms?
I think the most important one is when we're sitting somewhere comfortable to close our eyes. And the reason why it's easy to tune in to ourselves when we close our eyes is that we then connect to our inside self. If we have our eyes open, we can more easily get distracted and engaged with stuff that's happening beyond us. So if we close our eyes, we immediately tune in to what's happening within ourselves. Breath is just an amazing tool to start to shift our state. So if everybody on the call now takes a breath in through their nose and then release out through your mouth anything you might be holding on to, maybe it's some emotions, maybe some stale air, just to allow that energy to move. So taking a deep breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. And you'll start to feel your state change. So breath can be a wonderful tool to release anything that we might be holding on to metaphorically or just energy that's been sort of sitting or stagnating, which is quite a normal thing to happen, especially with the amount of time that people spend sitting at computers. And then taking your awareness down into the body. And it might be that they call it body awareness, where you take your awareness down to, say, around your tummy or around your heart. And if you're not used to this kind of thing, you can even put your hand on your tummy or your hands on your heart and then start to notice what's happening in that part of your body.
Yeah.
And then if you want to, with your breath, you can start to move any energy that you'd like to. And a wonderful process that's about the inner smile. So you can even breathe in and notice if you had an inner smile that was fluttering somewhere deep within you, allowing that to grow breath by breath until it flutters all the way through each cell of your body and up to your mouth, and you feel yourself smiling and feeling naturally happier. In fact, when we smile, our muscles move and it automatically triggers off endorphins. And the brain, even if we were to do a fake smile, the brain doesn't know when it's a fake smile or a real smile. All the brain knows is that when you do the action with those muscles in that way, that its purpose is to then trigger endorphins. So, not that I encourage people to fake it till you make it when it comes to happiness. However, it's really useful to understand the chemical process that happens in the body. Now, most people don't realise that endorphins, one of the few chemicals that are generated in every single organ of the body. So when you exercise, it releases serotonin and endorphins. Even if you, in the morning, do a couple of funky dance moves, nobody has to see it. There's a few things where you get to shift your body around. It triggers endorphins, and it also gets us out of those funny habits that we have. Of maybe standing or slouching in a certain way. So starting to use that principle of body awareness to bring our body back to life. In a way, we need to kind of wake it up, just like we're waking up our mind to exercising what happiness is. So it is that we need to wake up our body to happiness as well.
Yeah. Now, presumably with physiology of happiness, it must be also a physiology of unhappiness as well.
Well, if you're sitting in the chair right now, I'd invite everyone to slouch. I'm doing it. And then I'd like you to, everybody sit up, take a deep breath. Put a fake smile on your face. Or a very genuine smile. Imagine how that would be to have a genuine smile on your face. And you can notice the difference in those two states.
Yes. One thing I was curious about was your journey, Alexis, to finding your own inner happiness. And I was just wondering if you could share for people on the call a little bit more about your journey.
Yeah, I guess originally my career, I started out in human resources, and I was one of those really lucky people that when I sat in that chair doing that job when I was 19, I just knew that I was destined to serve people. And it was a bit of a journey before I got to that point. I came from quite an interesting childhood, and like most of us, we then spend a lot of our adult life unlearning the things that we learnt during our childhood that haven't really served us well to live a full life. And it was really through that work, helping people through training and recruitment and different staff development programs over the years, that I really got to appreciate witnessing people grow into their potential in work. And then I went travelling for quite a long time, and I lived in Thailand for a while, and that was my first exposure when I was about 21 to Buddhism and to just the concept of spirituality. And I realised when I lived there just how unspiritual my upbringing had been. And it was only while I was there that I started to appreciate that there was just a whole different way of living life that I wasn't particularly aware of in Australia. And I was fascinated because in Thailand you see people who have absolutely no money, but they're just so happy. They're just joyous souls, and their smiles are so radiant. I really had to look within myself and start to find a bit more playfulness, because Thais are very playful people. And it really made me appreciate how, I guess, kind of unplayful I'd become. And I was only 21. So it inspired me to, I guess, loosen up with my thinking and my attitudes, and because it's a warm country as well, so you naturally feel more relaxed. And that was when I really stepped into more of an exploration for myself about what it means to be a human being.
Yeah.
Because I'd never really thought about those questions. So after that, I was then planning to move to India. And I never quite made it to India. I had no intention of living in the UK, but here I have been for about 9 years now.
Yeah.
And I originally was in human resources over here, but then I moved into IT, and I just thought, you know what, I'd done some really interesting work in IT, but I was feeling a bit soulless. I was getting up and I was doing the long hours and the long weeks, and I was getting well paid, but it just didn't float my boat, didn't make me feel good. I felt fairly stressed, overtired, and within myself I just knew something wasn't quite right. So when I look back at my parents, both my parents are what I would classify as being workaholics. They worked really hard for really long hours, not particularly well paid. And my mother was a real influence on me because I came from a single parent household from when I was six. And she always struggled. She was a great struggler. And even to this day, she's still a good struggler. So I had to kind of unlearn the struggle bit, and I realised that I wanted to get out of IT, which was very much about things, and move back to what I was really passionate about, which was people. And that's what inspired me to set up the Happiness Centre, was to want people to have access to all of the skills and the information so they can actually realise their potential and realise that happiness is a natural state. How did we unlearn this stuff? It's incredible. If you look at babies, they're so happy, so naturally happy. It's an effortless happiness.
Yeah.
Because they're very present and in the moment.
Yeah.
And a lot of the work that I've done over the years around happiness and inner happiness has been about simplifying and starting to get rid of the things that we think we should do and actually do the things that we want to do.
Yeah.
All the while looking after our well-being.
Yeah. There's one thing that I absolutely love about babies, and that's or small children, and that's the ability to actually change state. And I don't often see children in London, but when I do, like, it's just, I always find it fascinating to watch their ability to move from the depths of sadness and despair all the way through to happiness within, it's almost like a heartbeat I've seen with some children. And I guess, like I notice in adults, that we tend to hold on to unhappiness much more than we need to. And I was just wondering if there are any sort of tips for reconnecting with that childlike quality in our lives. So if there is something that makes us unhappy, that we have the ability to move through it really rapidly.
Yeah, it's quite a common question, actually. Not in the context of babies, but how is it we can get some of that sadness. The first thing is to notice that it's generally an exaggerated response to a situation that's occurred. And that can be a really tough concept for people to get. But as an adult, we start to compound our beliefs that maybe happiness isn't for us, maybe it's a hard thing, not an easy thing. So we start to look around as adults for evidence why these things are actually true. And so if a bad situation happens, we go, well, there you go, there's another reason why. Not there you go, there's another reason why. Not there you go, there's another reason why. So we're always looking around for evidence to justify why what we believe is true. Whereas babies come from a different place. They just want to be fed, they just want to be loved, they want to be watered, they want a bit of a cuddle. And we forget as adults, we have those same needs.
We're not too similar.
We just don't communicate them as we speak to anymore.
Yeah.
I think that people find through the program is just more a more effortless expression of what's really happening for them.
Yeah.
Everything they need: food, water, a hug.
Yeah. Because we touched on this earlier on in the call as well. The whole concept of expression, I think expression and real deep self-expression is one of the most incredible energy forces you can connect with in your life. And yeah, I was just wondering if you could spend some more time just explaining how people can find their own voice again and really be connected with that full self-expression.
The first step is making a commitment to do it. And then rather than generalising, because most adults have a tendency to generalise, everything is difficult, or everything is, a certain way. Instead, the opportunity is to be present in the moment and start to notice, well, what do I want to say? What's true for me right now? And instead of editing, because we've got this amazing ability as adults to strategize. I did not say this because that might make him feel that way.
Yeah.
So instead of trying to edit everything that we want to come out, actually saying what's alive in the moment releases a huge amount of energy. I love that saying that truth releases energy. It does in individuals, it does in relationships, and it does in business. And the moment people make a commitment to truth, speaking their mind, speaking what's in their heart, we always have to exercise that muscle again, because we're not really used to a huge amount of truth.
Yeah.
But more often we actually say it like it is, the more at ease we feel. And for the people on the call, you've probably noticed times where you haven't said something that you really wanted to say, and then it probably sat with you for minutes or hours or even days afterwards, or for some people months and years. So it's important to spend some time with a friend or with yourself or even with someone who just wants to be present to listen for you to express what it is that might be unexpressed within you.
Yeah.
And some people are pretty heartily surprised at some of the stuff that comes out when you start practicing that.
Yeah.
You can imagine if you had some space for even just an hour for someone to truly, truly listen through you. that it can get through years of healing of things that have been left unsaid. Even if that person that you wish you had said it to isn't even present. It's not the point, it's just the verbalising and the getting it out. Because anything that was left unsaid is an energy within us. If it's present, it's taking up energy in our brain or our body. That's the concept of repression, isn't it, really? Repressed energy. So if we can find an outlet for it, and it's just not through speaking.
And one of the things I absolutely admire you for, Alexis, and that is the fact that you've actually just taken to stand-up comedy as a part of your journey around self-expression. And one of the things I love personally about comedy is the ability for people to express something and deliver it in a way that actually makes the unconscious mind think, where if it was delivered without humour, it may not actually get through to a person in quite the same way. I was just wondering if you could actually talk about how, I guess, your own self-expression journey with comedy and standing in front of an audience and being absolutely present and absolutely in the moment while you're up there on stage.
I haven't told a lot of people that I do stand on stage.
Now, people in 13 different countries around the world.
That's right. Well, I do. I do stand on comedy. And it was, so every year, I write down a list of things that I'd be scared to do. And then I make a commitment to do at least two of them. And so last year, one of those was stand-up comedy. A secret hidden dream that I always had was to get up on stage and be a comedian. And one of the things I've learned is public speaking, of course, is right up there with moving house and death for people. But I really started to enjoy it, because what I noticed is that once you have no fear, you're willing to get up and do anything. What I've noticed about myself, I'll own that statement. When I have no fear, I'm willing to get up and do anything without fear of judgment from others. And that would speak out for myself, but just how comfortable I've become with being myself. And the art of comedy, as I'm still learning, I would consider myself a novice. There are some videotapes floating around of some of my first performances, which I think, and so I found that with the skill of comedy, it's helping shape up people's mindsets to link something completely random with something else. And in our own lives, when we can start to see ourselves in a bit more of a comic approach, it really lightens up our approach to life. The things during the day, when you can start to make some wackier connections within yourself, or look at things from a slightly different perspective, all of that has a bit of a butterfly effect for how it is that we view things to be possible.
Like, I like the whole distorting back to the idea you shared before about looking for evidence, and I love the actually just drawing those two ideas together, but looking for evidence or just reasons to laugh or reasons to express yourself and reason to be in the moment, and then sort of just looking for evidence to create opportunity to express yourself in that way can be really, really powerful.
And again, it's kind of going back to playfulness. We forget that actually our natural state is to be playful, is to be happy, is to be loving, is to be kind, is to be close with other people, and really want to invite people into being more playful with themselves. And you can start practicing that stuff. It's as simple as when you go to buy a ticket for the train or some milk at the shop, actually having a slightly different conversation with the person behind the counter. Maybe it is that you hold your body in a different way, or that you put a bigger smile on your face, or you ask them, how was their day today? What's been great about their day today? So starting to use our resources in a different way to lighten up and to enjoy, being ourselves.
Excellent. Now, when people were signing up for the call, Alexis, many people actually also submitted a question that they had around happiness, and I'm just going to go through some of the ones that stood out for me. And I'm going to ask the first question, and it comes from Rosalind, who lives in the UK. And Rosalind wanted to know, how can inner happiness be found if external circumstances are difficult?
It's a great question, because I think it's all relative, isn't it? When I've been to some incredibly poor countries on my travels, they tend to be some of the happiest people, and they've seemingly got some of the least amount of resources around them, and maybe they're even in places of mild to extreme conflict. So I think regardless of what's happening beyond ourselves, if you go back to some of the great writers who were incredibly intellectual and incredibly creative and moved hearts and minds of people all around the world, people like Einstein and you know, all sorts of inventors and writers who actually spent quite a bit of time by themselves. That when we are in relationship with ourselves, which is the most important relationship to be in, when we're in relationship with ourselves, it really doesn't matter what's happening beyond us. And there's some really famous stories around, you know, Viktor Frankl when he was in the concentration camp in Auschwitz. And what he noticed was that people would start to fall into different patterns of behaviour. And his story is quite miraculous, because even when he was under extreme torture, he pictured himself being in a classroom in the future, telling his students in his imagination all about this experience that he was having now.
Yeah.
So even in moments of extreme physical distress, he found within himself, within his mind, within his heart, a semblance of connection and peace.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say happiness under those circumstances, but definitely an ability to still be in relationship with himself and in choice with how he wanted to respond to the situation.
Yeah.
But I see people quite often mindlessly responding automatically, reacting to things that happen, and sometimes taking a deep breath and pausing and then choosing, well, how is it that I'd like to respond? How would I like to be in this situation?
Yeah.
How would I like to speak? I don't need to speak in, say, somebody's spoken angrily or with a sense of kind of aggression or what we perceive to be overtly assertive, then it doesn't mean we have to respond like with like. We can actually get back into choice and say, well, take a deep breath, pause, how would I like to be in this moment?
And allowing
ourselves that space gives us, connects us to just how much freedom we really have.
Yeah, look, I really love the... I think Stephen Covey mentions it in his work, is the space between action and reaction, and just pausing and actually choosing your response to something can be really, like, just that idea alone can be totally life transforming. And certainly, like, the Viktor Frankl book is absolutely, for those people on the call who haven't read the book, it's called Man's Search for Meaning, and it is really one of the most profound explorations of the human experience, and really it blew me away, and I can certainly recommend that highly. Okay, now this is a question that's come from Sonia, and it's around happiness in relation to our peers and our peer groups. And Sonia asks, being happy when others around you are down can be challenging, particularly when people put you down for still feeling up. Can you give me some tools to help me with this?
Well, they say that unhappiness is catching, misery is catching. Misery loves company. But actually, and so does happiness in a strange way.
Yeah.
Because if you are in a situation where everybody's in, say, a certain state, maybe they're a bit frustrated, the moment that you get into choice about, well, how is it that I'd like to be in this situation? If I was being true to myself, what action would I choose here? And then do it. You start to actually, you're leading yourself, but you're also leading by example. I noticed, but particularly since I've been in the UK, because it's a slightly different culture than in Australia, that people are kind of more inclined to look at the negatives. So in those situations, even if you can invite people to say, well, you know, what's positive about this? What's the opportunity here? If we were going to look at this in a different way, how could we look at this situation or this problem or this challenge? Helps other people start to feel different, but also almost gives you public permission to suddenly choose happiness.
Yeah. Okay.
And some of the simpler tools, you know, if other people around you, such as in relationships, this is the big one that comes up in family environments or couples. Say one partner is having a really tough time and they're a bit miserable and a bit down and a bit agitated and a bit angry and a bit mopey. We've got a choice to either get into that state with them or to be self-creating about, well, actually, no, how would I like to be here?
Yeah.
How would I like to feel? Just because our partner is in a certain state doesn't mean that we then have to choose that state as well.
Yeah.
It's useful for us to have empathy. That's quite different from being in sympathy, mirroring somebody else. So it takes a lot of courage to be true to being lighthearted and more playful and more happy.
Yeah.
But again, it comes back to that pause, take a deep breath and ask ourselves the question, how would I be here? What would I choose instead?
Yeah. And the reason was that the temptation to jump down there when people aren't having good times, particularly if they're close to you. And a friend of mine who's an author, in his book described it was a sort of metaphorical story about a couple of people who were unhappy and they were basically stuck at the bottom of this well. And they could see their friends sort of walking around above the well. And the friend that was walking around the well saw them in distress and decided to get down there with them. And which was they were all three in the well, rather than actually taking the approach of saying, okay, they're down in the well, I really can't help them if I'm down there as well. What can I do from where I am at the moment and help them up, rather than actually meeting them at the depths of where they're at. Cool.
Yeah, it's tempting, because we're so used to meeting other people's needs.
Yeah.
That we, again, in those sort of situations, can put our own needs and desires to the side.
Yeah.
But in fact, I invite those opportunities to challenge us to stay in a state that we choose, rather than a state that we just suddenly take on.
Yeah. Excellent. Now we had a really good question here from Carol, and sort of the whole exploration of how past experiences actually impact today's happiness. And Carol's question was, how do I stop past experiences affecting my present decisions? These usually appear as fears of my own behaviour and feelings. So how really can we stop the past actually affecting the present and the future, particularly in a negative way?
Yeah, well, it's something that we tend to commonly do because we're not actually present. It's really hard for us to stay in the past if we're in the present.
Mm.
And it's really hard for us to go back to the past if we are present.
Mm.
So that question for me in my experience, in my own life, but also with clients, is very much about if you're truly present in the now and you can ask yourself in integrity, how is it, what choice do I make for myself now in this moment in the way that I'd like to, it starts to build up our muscle in the presence to get back into choice.
Yeah.
Of course, our past experience influences our future behaviour the moment we're unaware of it.
Yeah.
And yet the moment we can say, well, actually, even if I look at what I've done in the past couple of days, in what ways have I repeated my past? And looking for opportunities to transform with new awareness and new learning into being who it is that you want to be, you know, from now.
Yeah.
The biggest question that pops up around happiness is, well, yeah, I can't be happy yet, but I'll be happy when.
Yeah.
But, well, actually, no. Like, now's life. Life is not a dress rehearsal. This is it. It's like any other spiritual philosophies or religious theories around it. You know, we'll just put all that to the side because they're the unknowns. But what we do know is that we're alive right now in this moment. And if you feel yourself getting drawn back into the stuff from the past, then just train yourself to be present. And get present most easily through our senses and through breathing.
Yeah, great.
And, of course, there are the opportunities that if we feel, if somebody's feeling really stuck, that they're repeating patterns from the past consistently, then I encourage them to seek some external support if we don't have the skills or the knowledge or the experience to be able to change our own behaviour. Then we need to go through a process of learning how to do that, and sometimes seeking the support of an experienced therapist of some sort can make an enormous difference to people understanding, oh, wow, okay, I don't have to be like that.
Yeah.
I can actually start to choose a different mindset. And yet we don't get taught how to do that as a child or a teenager. And it's really only as we become an adult that we start to understand how much responsibility we have to manage our own mind, manage our own behaviour.
Yeah. Excellent. Now, in a moment, I'm going to just ask a question about how, like through your happiness coaching program, that you actually help people and guide them to their true inner happiness. But before that, I just have one question that I wanted to ask from Gordon. And Gordon's question was in relation to being happy in today's modern world. And Gordon asks, how does one start to find inner happiness in today's world when there are such great expectations on us both in terms of our professional lives, where the work balance is one-sided, and also in terms of our social lives, where financial and time pressures represent major constraints in fulfilling personal objectives? So how is it possible to balance our personal considerations and find our true inner happiness with the demands of modern life and modern living?
Well, my first response to that would be about people being realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I often see individuals being a bit brainwashed by the media or celebrities or expectations from parents, expectations from themselves, that are actually just generally unrealistic with how much you can get done or how you can get it done or what you should be doing with your life. So my first response to that would be tuning in and clarifying, what is it that's really true for you? And you talked earlier about simplifying, and I'm a huge one for that through the work that I do with people. Just simplifying, just stop doing stuff. All the stuff that you think you should do, just stop doing it. What would happen if you did? Generally, not a lot. There might be a little bit of kicking and screaming here and there, but generally speaking, people just fill too much of their time with too much stuff. Because they're trying to get somewhere. When you start to speak to people that are either really deeply at peace or have an enormous amount of wealth, you know what? They don't do a lot at all. And the people who are spiritual with no money and the people who are wealthy, there's actually not a huge amount of difference between their sense of inner happiness. Having the money or not having the money, but it's the inner bit that's the most important. It's a classic story of people like John Belushi, people that have seemingly got it all. He was an actor who died, way too early for his time.
Yeah.
And it's quite a famous story, really, because here he had seemed to have everything, and yet he was just deeply, deeply depressed and deeply unhappy.
Yeah.
And it's quite a common story when you look around in the world of people high profile in the media. Do you really want that life?
Yeah.
Is it realistic? Will it really give you what you need? Will it make you happier? And generally the answer is a big hearty no. So the process of simplifying, how much do we really need to buy? Do you really need to spend that money? How is it that you can create a life where you're feeling generally more satisfied with less effort?
Yeah, I think that there is something just in terms of sort of drawing back to creating time and space for yourself each day. Just that 10 minutes a day of creating spaciousness for the things that you want to flow into your life. And often, whether there are big demands, like I know I've certainly found this through my own personal life and my personal life experience, that when I have my life absolutely crammed, packed, full of life and full of doing things, very rarely is there any opportunity for new things to flow in. And I think just that discipline of creating, even if it is just starting off with 10 minutes a day, to create that space in time for new experiences and new awarenesses, and also just in the physical environment as well. Like, if one of my favourite stories was one of Daniel Day-Lewis, and apparently Daniel Day-Lewis, the actor, like, he lives a very, very simple life, and in his apartment there's just a futon bed. I think there may be like a clothes rack for his clothes and maybe some stereo equipment, and that's pretty much it. And he just lives a really, really simple and spacious life. And there is a quality about really working out what it is that you value and then starting to let go of the things that aren't really giving you any true meaning. So, like, I really do like the concept of simplicity and spaciousness.
Yeah, I had a meeting with Bianca Madison, who's a quite well-known nutritionist today.
Yeah.
And she was telling me about Daryl Hannah, who's doing exactly the same kind of thing. She lives in a caravan with a teepee.
Yeah.
On a hill. So it's kind of ironic, isn't it, how some individuals choose to go on that journey for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But then it goes full circle, doesn't it, to simplifying again.
Yeah.
And if you speak to anyone who's in their 80s, 90s, they all say exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
They just say, let it all go. A lot of the stuff that we think matters, it just doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
What matters is being loving to ourselves and loving and kind with others, and the quality of our relationships is the wealth in our life. The quality of our relationship with ourselves and our health is the wealth in our life. The external stuff is so much more secondary.
Yeah. There's one of my favourite Bruce Lee quotes is, "What the art of living is a process of elimination rather than accumulation." And I think with all the media messages we receive in the Western world, there is a temptation to follow the path of accumulation. And often that doesn't lead you in the direction that you want to go. But the process of actually looking at everything that you do have in your life and just working out what's really important and what is it that I truly value and how can I experience more of what I value. Great.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to do, which is even just writing a list of 10 things that you love and enjoy.
Yeah.
And then committing to yourself to doing them at some point over the next month.
Yeah.
Things you love and enjoy.
Yeah.
And starting to if we're going to fill our time with something, then it might as well be stuff that we
like doing.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, Alexis, now I'm very curious to spend a bit of time talking about your inner happiness coaching program. And before we actually go into the specifics of what you offer through it, I was just wondering if you could share with me and the callers today what was your inspiration for creating a program called the Inner Happiness Coaching Program?
Yeah, it actually came out of having done a huge amount of work over the years through coaching, counselling, hypnotherapy, and as a professional trainer, facilitator. The one thing that people generally want is happiness.
Yeah.
Cut it all back. It doesn't matter what they're coming to a session for. They just want to feel happier. They want to feel better and more alive and more free and more self-expressed. And at the end of the day, that for me is all about your inner experience of yourself. And then taking that into how it is that you then craft the world. So what inspired me was to want to give a structure step-by-step approach that people could experience, to start to simplify back to, well, what is their truth? And in fact, it's a 10-module program that we do over 3 months. And it just blows me away time and time again when I'm doing this kind of work with clients, because we start out doing the self-discovery and the goal. So we'll pull everything out of the box and start to look at, well, what do you really, really want? And we get a few mumbles, and it's like, what do you really, really, really want? If you could have anything in the world, if it could be any way you'd like it to be. And the stuff that consistently comes up is people just want to feel financially secure. They want to be doing work that they love. They want to be in a relationship where they're giving and receiving love in a way that works for them. They want to be filling their spare time with things that bring them satisfaction, joy, or make a difference to other people. And they want their health and their well-being to be in balance. So the program covers all of those areas in a really structured way. So we start out with some quite big, audacious outcomes in three different areas of their life, and then we work through each module so that, as an example, session two is about life purpose and values. The third session is about beliefs and behaviours. So not only are they learning about how to manage themselves, but they start to peel away all the stuff that isn't making a difference or is being a bit of an energy drainer, and focus on who it is that they really are and what's really important to them.
Yeah.
And as we move through further modules of the program towards the end of it, we work on things like relationship and love and wealth and abundance. And towards the end of the program, it's setting them up for very much having some sustainable strategies so they can manage themselves in a more effortless way in the future, so that they can then set their own set of outcomes over a 3, 6, or 12-month period.
Yeah.
And they can always check in, because they get a quite hefty workbook with it about to check in that they're being true to their values, true to their beliefs, true to their standards of behaviour that they'd like, true to their health, true to their happiness.
Great. And say for people on the call, if they were to find out more information or to seek out more information, how would they best go about that?
If you go to www.thehappinesscentre.com, and that's the English spelling of centre, so it's the Happiness Centre, CENTRE.com, and on the homepage there is a link to the Inner Happiness Coaching Program. So there's quite a bit of information online, and I'm always happy to answer any questions that people might have. You can drop me an email. My email is alexis@thehappinesscentre.com. Or if you're in the UK, you can give my mobile a call, which is on the website as well. And to explore whether or not it might be a pathway for somebody to find their own individual happiness.
Okay, brilliant. So for people who may not have had a pen, the web address is thehappinesscentre.com, and there's a link on the homepage to the Happiness Coaching Program, and also if you wanted to drop an email to Alexis directly, it's alexis@thehappinesscentre.com. That's okay. There was a question that I personally had, Alexis, and it was around your routines, like your happiness routine, and just, I guess, making happiness a daily part of life. I was just wondering if you could share your own personal daily routines for happiness.
The things that I consistently do that keep me in balance around my happiness is, first thing I do in the morning, always take lots of deep breathing. Mm-hmm. And I always do 20 minutes of meditation. Two different types of meditation. I prefer Vedic meditation. I found it's been the best for me. I always drink either water with lemon juice or have a fresh juice in the morning. And so my body is feeling happy.
Mm.
I write my intentions for the day, and then I check in with myself during the day. So if I'm feeling uncomfortable or a bit anxious or frustrated about something, which are quite natural feelings, then I'll simply ask myself what's really going on there and what I need to do differently. And then at the end of the day, I always do my list of what I'm grateful for. So I've got a booklet coming out, actually, called Gratitude Grows. Because, of course, whatever we focus on is what grows. So I'll list all the things that I'm grateful for that day. And it's an opportunity for a bit of self-love and self-acknowledgement as well.
Yeah.
It gives me a bit of a boost of inner happiness before I then go to sleep. And always making sure I get enough sleep. That's another very important thing for my happiness.
Yeah. Excellent. That's some very, very good tips in there. Now that brings us to the end of our call, Alexis. Thank you so much for sharing your wealth of wisdom and experience this evening. I certainly feel a lot happier, and I hope everyone on the call does as well. And yeah, I just thought you said some really excellent strategies for just how to actually come to happiness in a practical and centered and calm way. And yeah, I think anyone who is looking to experience more happiness, certainly do get in touch with Alexis through the Happiness Centre, and maybe just give Alexis an email or drop her a quick call and maybe see if the happiness program is for you. Excellent.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, cool. Thanks for coming on the call. Now, I was just wondering if you had some closing or parting words on happiness for people to take away with them this evening.
It would be to invite yourself into a process of daily happiness and to share it with yourself and with others around you at every opportunity. Why? Just because you can.
Brilliant. Cool. Thank you so much, Alexis, and thank you everyone on the call for ringing in this evening and for also submitting your questions through the site. I will be sending out a recording of the call tomorrow, so you will be able to listen back at your leisure once again. And also, if you do want to check out other great interviews that I've done with people through the People You Should Meet program, if you just go to www.peopleyoushouldmeet.com and just click on the recordings tab, and you'll see a whole host of inspiring interviews. So thank you everyone for your full participation. Thank you so much, Alexis, and I wish you all a very happy evening. Take care.